Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
Well, I do. It does concern me that in many cases, I feel like people don't recognize how important the timeliness is with regard to the application of crop protection and crop promotion fertilizer products on to get the yields that our farmers depend on and we all depend on for our food supply in this country.
Georgia Representative Austin Scott, member of the House Ag Committee, talking to Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack.
I hope you and USDA will stay on the Department of Transportation, making sure that they understand, and the Department of Labor, and making sure they understand that when we have to have these crop protection products in the field, putting it on 2 or 3 weeks late doesn't work.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
They're $13 billion short on purchases, and there are seven key areas where they have yet to perform. Biotech approvals, DDG sales, tariffs on ethanol.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack making his first appearance in front of the House Agriculture Committee on Thursday, answering a wide range of questions from trade with China and that Phase 1 trade agreement to making indigenous and culturally acceptable foods available to their respective communities through USDA's Food and Nutrition Service. Now, one common area of concern from the committee was the issue of struggles by dairy farmers, both through government programs as well as in the trade arena. Now, Vilsack reassured members that the administration would continue to fight for rights that the domestic dairy industry won in recent trade deals and would also be receptive to changing milk marketing orders if the industry could find common ground to solve the longstanding problems. Vilsack's the only person to serve as Secretary of USDA under two different administrations, the Obama administration and now the Biden administration, second longest serving Secretary of Ag, and he explained how USDA plans to utilize the Commodity Credit Corporation or CCC funds to promote climate smart adoption by farmers, ranchers, and foresters. Well, with the background of a multi-year historic drought across Texas, a declining beef herd, and negative returns for meat packers, Cargill announced the closing of a packing plant on the South Plains. Given the overcapacity that exists with four major plants in the Texas Panhandle and a dwindling supply of cattle in the region, idling Plainview will allow Cargill to operate its other beef plants in Texas, Colorado, and Kansas, explained John Keaton, president of Cargill Beef, 9 years ago this week. Now, at the time, the U.S. cattle herd was at its lowest level since 1952, and Keaton said increased feed costs resulting from the prolonged drought, combined with herd liquidations by cattle ranchers, were severely and adversely contributing to the challenging business conditions that they face as an industry. Now, today, that plant serves as a parking lot for tractor trailers from a nearby Walmart distribution center. It's no longer available to return to its previous use. But ironically, drought now starting to set back into the region. The nation's cattle herd is liquidating and feed costs are increasing. Main difference between 2013 and today, record-breaking profits the four major meat packers are making, in part due to the tightening of the processing capacity from a decade ago. Speaking of a decade, though the 2021 cotton crop has been harvested, the challenges are mounting on an industry looking at the highest prices, $1.20 plus per pound, in more than 10 years. Now, USDA is projecting a domestic crop of 17.6 million bales, and for many producers, their ability to market a bale of cotton is contingent on the bale being graded for fiber quality by a regional Agricultural Marketing Service, or AMS, classing office. Without that official grade, the bale sits in a warehouse unable to move. Industry experts point to a reduced workforce due in part to COVID-19 and a tight labor supply for the backlog at all classing offices nationwide. Situation does appear to be improving as AMS reports 14.4 million upland bales classed across the country, or 82% of USDA's projected production. It's Agriculture Today.
On the phone with Joe Guzman, Director of Sales for Equinom Smarter Sesame. Joe, 2022's here. You have lots of opportunities in sesame.
That's right, Stephen. We have grain handlers with 2022 agreements ready to be signed. Smarter Sesame makes a great rotational crop for producers who are planning for the new crop and season. With inputs on the rise, Smarter Sesame is a great choice for low input acres.
Joe, if somebody wants to find out more, how can they do that?
They can call 1-833-SESAME or visit equinom.com.
Every drop counts. Introducing the Patriot 50 Series Sprayer from Case IH that puts every drop of product exactly where you want it. Enhanced LED lights, a cab designed for all-day comfort, and more precise spraying technology. Because just like you, we know every drop counts. Visit your local Wiley implement for details on the new Patriot 50 Series Sprayer.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Now, a key function of our House Agriculture Committee is to conduct oversight and ensure that the executive branch is implementing congressionally authorized programs as they are attended.
The chairman of the House Agriculture Committee from Georgia is David Scott. Welcoming the Secretary of Agriculture, Tom Vilsack, in front of the committee for a hearing and a recap on what USDA has been doing.
You know, I suppose I could focus on the fact that our farm income is as good as it's been in the last 8 years, that we've had record exports, but I'd really like to focus on one phrase of my testimony on page four, because I think it explains the heart of the challenge that farmers in rural America faces and has faced for a considerable period of time. I want to focus on the phrase, extraction economy. I make this reference on page four of my testimony in order to set the stage for discussion, hopefully over the long haul, as you begin your process of the Farm Bill reauthorization. Our extraction economy is an economy that essentially we take things from the land and off the land, and unfortunately, rather than converting them and value-adding them in and close to the rural areas where the natural resource is, they are transported to long distances where they are value-added in some other location where opportunities and jobs are created elsewhere. I think it's going to be important for us as we look forward to try to develop what is called a circular economy, in which the wealth is created and stays in rural areas. Let me give you a couple of examples of how that could happen. There has been a focus on local and regional food systems. We learned during the pandemic that our food system was not as resilient as we hoped it would be. One of the ways of making it more resilient is to create local and regional opportunities. That's one of the reasons why we are focused on expanding processing capacity, something that I hear all the time when I travel around the country. The need for our cattle producers, our livestock producers, our hog producers to have choice and opportunity for a local processing facility that creates local jobs that allows that revenue and wealth that's created from processing to stay in the community. Another example is obviously the bio-based manufacturing. Biofuels is one example, but there are a multitude of ways in which we can convert agricultural waste product into a wide variety of things beyond renewable energy and fuel, to include chemicals, materials, fabrics, and fibers, again, creating opportunity for farmers and additional income sources, as well as rural jobs. Climate change creates an opportunity for us. As we look at ways in which rural lands can be used to sequester carbon, as we embrace climate-smart agricultural practices, it opens up a whole new vista of opportunity for farmers to essentially be paid for the carbon sequestration that they are currently doing and will do in the future. These are all examples of a circular economy where the wealth basically stays, the opportunity is created, the jobs are created in rural areas. And we at USDA are focused on trying to insert and encourage that type of circular economy to be more prevalent in rural areas across the United States. Mr. Chairman, I know that there are a variety of questions that will be posed today, but I hope as this committee begins its serious work of the Farm Bill that you'll take some time to work with us to take a look at how we might be able to do a better job of maintaining and creating wealth in rural communities and making sure that historically underserved populations and communities also get a fair amount of attention. And we at USDA are committed to working with you in partnership to use the resources that are available from Congress in a way that helps to create those kinds of opportunities.
It's Agriculture Today.
The Cattle Industry Convention and NCBA Trade Show is the oldest and largest event in the beef cattle industry, and we're headed to Houston, February 1st through the 3rd. Everything's bigger in Texas, so you can't afford to miss the massive NCBA Trade Show. Engaging speakers, outstanding education, all for the beef cattle industry. We've gone to Texas for CattleCon 2022, February 1st through the 3rd. Visit convention.ncba.org for more.
What can you get for 2 cents these days? How about new, more efficient wheat varieties? Better market access for Texas wheat producers and increased demand to your product. Each year, the Texas Wheat Producers Board achieves these goals by investing producer contributions to promote wheat through research, education, and market development. Who knew 2 cents could be so valuable? A message from the Texas Wheat Producers Board.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Yes, it's very similar to what it was a year ago, if not worse. Might be a little bit worse even.
So that's D. Vaughn. He's a former president of the National Corn Growers Association and a Texas Panhandle Diversified Farmer, talking about how conditions to start this year resembled the same conditions last year.
We've had some fires up in our part of the world, the northern panhandle, grass fires and wildfires. Anyway, it's a serious situation for ranchers, for fire safety, and then, of course, for ag producers like myself. You know, we're going into a protein planting season here in a few months and very, very dry conditions.
So lack of moisture going into the growing season is obviously a concern, but for many growers, Vaughn says there is a bigger concern, and that's inputs.
Well, we've seen a tremendous increase in nitrogen, phosphate, all types of fertilizers. It's setting all-time historical records on prices levels for all types of fertilizers. And so it began about a year ago this time. It was when it really started to begin taking off a little bit. We saw fertilizer prices continue to start to climb. And then they continued through the spring and into the summer. And of course, our prices, commodity prices, were also going up. And as sure as death in taxes, farmers know that if commodity prices are going up, then the input costs are going to follow shortly. And so, you know, there wasn't a lot of alarm when they first started going up last spring. But as they went through, it was kind of like your personal alarm clock beside your bed last spring and early summer. But then as the summer went on, well, the bell got louder, the alarm bell. And, of course, it's just really clamoring at this point because we've seen such huge increases in nitrogen and phosphate prices.
So higher input costs, but what about higher crop prices? Does that help?
It definitely helps if you have higher prices to help pay for the higher input costs. But the downside to it is we've seen, since 2020, we've seen about a 33% increase or in my operation based on what I sold corn for in 2020 versus what I sold corn for and what I project to sell corn for in 22. About a 33% increase, but I've seen in my personal operation, 264% increase in the price of nitrogen and a 241% increase in all of my fertilizer program. So, you know, if you look at compare a 33% increase in the price of a commodity of my, what I'm selling, the corn, and I'm looking at a 264% increase on my input cost, the trajectory there is not good. That doesn't work. And so that's what's got everyone concerned about. Plus, the worst-case scenario for producers is we buy these high input products and put into a crop, and we're borrowing money to pay for those inputs. And then we lose a crop, it's hailed out, we have a late freeze on the wheat crop, whatever that might be. We lose the crop, and then we've got these huge bills that have to be paid next fall. And, of course, there's no guarantee the prices are going to stay this high. And while we might be able to forward contract some, we can't forward contract the whole crop and take the risk of not being able to deliver. So we get into that situation where, you know, we could be selling corn for half what it is now. If some black swan event happens and, you know, wrecks the commodity markets.
It's Agriculture Today.
Take the guesswork out of preparing your cotton for harvest with NanoPro. Utilizing NanoPro's revolutionary nanoliquid technology, your harvest aids go to work faster and more efficiently, increasing leaf drop, reducing regrowth, and helping your cotton be ready when you are. Offering a 3-to-1 return on investment, you can't go wrong with NanoPro. Learn more or find your nearest dealer by calling Tracy Carrillo at 575-639-5110 or visit aquayield.com.
If you don't push yourself, how will you know what you're really made of? Cotton Research and Promotion Program works to develop innovative performance technologies that redefine cotton's capabilities and helps athletes push themselves further. Cotton Incorporated is working hard to educate consumers about cotton's versatility, especially in the athletic apparel market. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
As you well know, the Commodity Credit Corporation, in part, is designed to provide for the promotion of commodities.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack on Thursday before the House Agriculture Committee with a wide range of questions, including how USDA will fund Climate Smart Ag.
And what we're hearing and seeing from the food industry is the need for climate smart commodities for sustainably produced commodities in which they can ensure their consumers that what they're purchasing is not harmful to the environment. So we want to be able to help producers create those climate smart commodities. It falls under, it's either Section 4 or Section 5 of the CCC, and we are very confident that we have the capacity and ability to use this without jeopardizing any of the other needs or reasons for the CCC. This will give, farm groups and food groups have basically proposed and suggested this in the Food and Farm Alliance document on climate smart agriculture, suggesting the need for demonstration and pilot projects funded through the CCC, and we're following the prescription of groups like the American Farm Bureau in their advocacy for this. So we feel very confident we have the legal grounds based on the fact that we will be promoting climate smart commodities.
Secretary also facing questions on incorporating indigenous foods to tribal communities.
We have entered into 8 demonstration projects with 8 tribes through our Office of Tribal Relations to begin to incorporate more fully indigenous foods into the foods that are available under the federal food program for tribes and under our SNAP program. Trying to figure out ways in which we can incorporate more fully and completely the availability of indigenous foods. It's not just the ability of meeting the food security and food needs, cultural needs of populations. It's also about creating opportunity and economic opportunity. And to the extent that you create a local and regional food system, one that is designed to produce those culturally appropriate foods, you are also creating jobs. And you are creating what I referred to earlier as a circular economy. And we are continuing to work with tribes to try to do more of this. I would say one of the challenges in this space we are also trying to address, and that is the fractionated ownership of land, particularly in tribal areas, as well as African-American farmers. And this is an issue that we're trying to address with the Ayers Property Rule that we instituted. There's roughly $120 million that's going to be made available for a sort of a revolving loan fund that will create the opportunity for people to consolidate a land title, which in turn will allow them to exercise and to be able to access resources from USDA. And so these are integrated parts in terms of what Congress can do. You know, obviously one thing you can do is to have a budget. That's the first thing we'd like to see, because that would allow us the ability to have sufficient resources to be able to provide the technical assistance that is needed to institute many of these programs.
And not just for tribal communities. He talks about making culturally acceptable foods available to those respective communities.
One of the things we're trying to do is to make sure that we have available processing capacity that creates that culturally appropriate food. And as we look at the various programs that we've announced recently to try to expand capacity and expand competition, we bear in mind that part of those resources need to be done to make sure that the kosher and halal foods are available and that they are produced and processed in the appropriate way.
It's Agriculture Today.
Whether it's a weekend retreat, rich productive farmland, or green grazing pasture, land is a timeless investment. Capital Farm Credit, a member-owned lending cooperative, specializes in land financing with competitive rates and flexible terms. Our lending staff understands agriculture and country living and can assist you with land ownership. Let us finance your way of life. CapitalFarmCredit.com.
This is Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com and texascrp.com, to view many properties we have currently listed in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Give us a call at 800-933-9698 to discuss these properties in detail. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
It is growth across all segments.
Kurt Blades is with the Association of Equipment Manufacturers on a big year for tractor and combine sales.
140 horsepower for the year of 2021 over 2020, up about 9%. 40 to 100 horsepower for the year has been just over 10%. 100-plus horsepower tractors have been up over 24% for the year. All of those combined, when you sort of, you know, break those down by the class with the total numbers, where the whole segment is up 10% for the year. Then when you put in the articulated four-wheel drive, so those are going to be big four-wheel drive tractors. Those are up 18% for the year. That's a smaller volume, but still representing about 600 additional units were sold in that class this year than what were sold last year. And then finally, we also track combines. Combines are up 1,200 additional units in 2021 versus 2020. That's represented about a 25% growth. Now, you look at combines and articulated four-wheel drive. I love talking about those two in particular, because the cost of entry for either one of those pieces of equipment, pretty high. So farmers got to feel really good about what their future holds for them to make that capital of investment of, you know, well over $500,000. They got to feel good not about the crop this year or next year, but really the 5 and even 10 year prospects. So that's where, you know, a lot of times people will look at these capital markets as a good indication of farmer sentiment. And it's pretty accurate. It's proven to be pretty accurate over the last few years.
We're also coming off of a year with positive net farm income.
Well, I would say it's not just limited to large, because, you know, I speak about new equipment, but as you know, the used equipment market's been pretty solid, and it's been solid kind of across the board. Now, what I would say is that the equipment fleet has some age to it. And, when you kind of look at averages, we're actually dealing with sort of an older fleet than we've been dealing with for a long time. So that's where, you know, we've kind of been working in a replacement market for the last 5-10 years. So when you see some, you know, improvement on both the top line and the bottom line of farm income, I think it's when you see some of that capital equipment being made into equipment. Now, it's also worth saying, and I'm sure you're hearing this from all your farmers you talk to and anyone that's involved in agriculture, is knowing that there is very real inflation in input costs, whether it's fertilizer or your crop inputs of any shape or form. I think we've been a lot, you know, historically, tractor sales track almost 1-to-1 with the price of corn, and that usually works really well. I think we've seen that for the last few years. But knowing that there's so much pressure on the bottom line of farms right now with that the higher price of input, I think we're going to, you know, be paying a lot of attention to the overall profitability of the farm sector in the next few months, and we'll see how well farmers continue to do. I know they're optimistic. Certainly hope that their bottom lines reflect that optimism for the next year.
And AEM already looking forward to New Orleans in March Commodity Classic.
I mean, you talk about a fun time to be in agriculture when you've got tractors that can drive themselves or sprayers that can, you know, control down to the inch and sub-inch level. That's a fundamental change. And being able to see that technology on display and even interact with the folks and the brains behind that equipment, that's a pretty neat opportunity for a farmer. And certainly farmers that are wanting to be in business for the next few years to get an indication of both the equipment needs that they have for today, but also what they need to be planning for in the future so they can have the most efficient and sustainable operation they can possibly have.
It's Agriculture Today.
For years, Texas cotton growers have had a trusted partner when it comes to choosing their varieties. Next Gen brand cottonseed from AmeriCut. Next Gen varieties bred specifically for West Texas growers have performed year after year, even in harsh conditions. And for this year's season, there are several new Bolguard 3 Extend Flex varieties available. Contact your local Next Gen representative or dealer today to learn more about varieties suited for your needs. Next Gen, your West Texas partner for performance cottonseed.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
President Biden has fostered an agenda that's kind of rife with executive overreach and regulatory uncertainty and a far-left ideology that just doesn't align with the hardworking men and women who enrich our nation and our world.
Ranking member of the House Ag Committee from Pennsylvania, G.T. Thompson, addressing Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack on Thursday at a House Ag Committee hearing.
Mr. Secretary, our constituents want a government that works for them as an advocate for their businesses, their products, and their livelihoods. And I'll tell you at this stage, folks do not believe this administration's in their corner. Farmers, ranchers, and foresters and consumers are battling significant supply chain disruptions and rising energy and input costs, increasing inflation, and long-standing labor shortages. And these strains exacerbate the ongoing challenges of production agriculture. As you know, Mr. Secretary, our communities are looking for solutions, and they don't need onerous federal regulatory burdens and mounds of new red tape from WOTUS and NEPA to controversial livestock rules and other regulatory actions. That's what they and we are witnessing. Now, our nation's ability to provide its citizens in the world with the safest, most affordable, and abundant food and fiber supply is our fundamental mandate. And I know all of us in both parties realize are motivated by this tremendous responsibility. Unfortunately, there remains a disconnect between our shared mandate and what's coming out of Washington. In Congress, trillions in ideological new spending was contemplated and signed into law when instead we needed targeted fixes to supply chain bottlenecks and labor shortages. And now it appears further funding is under discussion. It fails to address the frail Biden economy, including the massive labor shortfalls. Under this administration, we see a Clinton-era swine inspection program rolled back. Despite being grounded in science and designed to enhance processing capacity, efficiency, and food safety. Now, we need greater certainty and supply chain resiliency for both producers and consumers. On other fronts, domestic productivity relative to resource use for agriculture is up a whopping 287% since the 1940s. I think that's something that we all should be very proud of. While the total farm inputs remain mostly unchanged, our producers have spent decades showing the world that they are the answer to reducing global greenhouse gas emissions, and they are not the problem. Activists with little knowledge of production agriculture are winning the day. And I hope this administration and department rethink their alliance with these coalitions and ideologues. Mr. Secretary, I want to be your partner. Makeshift responses to congressional inquiries, and in many cases, no response at all, have made it extremely challenging for my colleagues on both sides of the aisle, myself included, to maintain a meaningful dialogue with the department policy briefings and administration updates with little to no notice for members further strain our partnership. There is an opportunity to work together. I believe that wholeheartedly, and we stand ready. A critical part of doing so is beginning our 2018 Farm Bill implementation and oversight process and working towards the next reauthorization. That's putting politics aside. That's what we tend to do here in the Agriculture Committee, and beginning an earnest, deliberative process of what's working, what's not for producers, rural communities, and consumers. I look forward to starting that process with our members and with you, Ms. Secretary. But in the meantime, we must stabilize our economy and supply chains, improve labor force participation, deliver common sense regulatory action, and better understand the needs of our shared constituency. I think that starts with this hearing, so I'm very appreciative of the chairman for this hearing. And again, I thank the secretary for coming before this committee and look forward to more productive and consistent discourse.
It's Agriculture Today.
When it comes to farming cotton in West Texas, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers rely on Delta Pine brand cotton, bred, tested, and made in West Texas for West Texas growing conditions. Strong is a legacy all its own. Protect yours with strong cotton from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Ring in the new year with savings at South Plains Implement. Looking for a new ride? Get great deals and financing options across a wide selection of John Deere lawn equipment during the Winter Green Sales event. Have time to tackle repairs on harvest equipment? In-stock peanut and cotton harvest equipment parts 15% off. Ready to plow into planting season? South Plains Implement offering 15% off complete sets of tillage parts. Some restrictions apply. Offers end January 31st at South Plains Implement, where farm meets family.
This is Agriculture Today.
With nitrogen, the environment plays such a large role. With the lack of rainfall, it can influence what's going on from an uptake standpoint. If we have conditions where we have, 10 inches in 24-hour period, that can also result in leaching and runoff, as well as denitrification losses, all having a negative environmental impact.
Katie Lewis is with the Texas A&M AgriLife Research on the impact the weather has on nitrogen, on sustainability.
So to me, sustainability isn't just the economics, but it's the environmental as well. And, I think all of the research that we are currently conducting is focused on both of those aspects. And through improving management strategies, we're not just going to positively influence economic sustainability, but also the environmental sustainability.